Hi, everybody. My name is Kathy, and I am an alcoholic. And I feel like I won the lottery because I get to be first, which means I get to go back there and relax first. We really thought Melissa was going to go first, so I was like, okay. And I brought my Canadian flag just in case I blow it. I am from West Virginia, but if in case I blow it, I'm going to go seek amnesty in Canada. Oh, no. I like to cover all bases, be a good Girl Scout, you know. But I am, I'm amazed that I'm standing here today. I never conceived that this would be a possibility in my life, you know. And I look around the room and I'll start to cry because I see so many people here who have led me to this space, you know. I have my past delegates, I have my past delegates and my current friends, and my current friends here, they're all supporting me. And when I look in this room, and I mean, I am a nervous alcoholic, but somebody once told me that you are all my friends, so I don't have to get nervous. Just tell my body that, please. But, you know, anyway. Okay, as far as the maturity through the warranties, Bill W. said in 1950 that on AA's 15th anniversary that we had come of age, you know, that we were mature. And, I mean, it sounds kind of funny, but it's like I didn't start maturing until I got sober at the age of 47. So when I got this topic, I was like, me, you know? And then I realized that, you know, not really knowing the topic never stopped me from talking anyway. So I figured I'd go for it, you know. But I kind of wanted to bring some personal stuff into it because I think that's what made the warranties real for me. And when I, you know, it's like when I give a lead, I'll usually say that I sponsor and I have a sponsor and she has a sponsor. But what I don't usually share is that the sponsor that I have now, it's the second time that she's been my sponsor. And I didn't get drunk. It was just that when she was sponsoring me the first time, she wanted me to think about things and, you know, be responsible and all this stuff, right? And she would, like, hurt my feelings. But I think the main thing that you know, broke the camel's back was when I was going to go off on vacation with across three states with someone that I knew for less than a month. She didn't think that was a very prudent decision, but I thought it was a damn good one, you know. But you know, and then to sort of pile on the maturity level, I didn't even tell her she wasn't my sponsor anymore, you know. And we still laugh about that one. But you know, I mean, that's the thing about the warranties, or it's like, you know, looking back, all she was asking me to do was to practice prudence in my actions. You know, and prudence is a word that seeps through the warranties. The dictionary defines it as being wise in practical affairs as by providing for the future. You know, Bill W. wanting to make sure that AA would be around, and Bill W. wanted to make sure AA would be around for the future, just like my sponsor wanted me to be around and not putting myself in perilous situations, you know. And that's what the warranties do, I believe, on the level of the fellowship. You know, our founders gave us the concepts to provide a service structure that could survive the jumble of alcoholic personalities and egos. You know, we're out there, right? They're guidelines which teach us how to play nice together, to show respect even when we have a difference of opinion, and to think about something from many different angles before we take any action on it. You know, the warranties fundamentally summarize and symbolize all the previous concepts, just like the 12th step summarized the first 11 steps. Now, my very first guidelines were provided by my parents. You know, they taught me right from wrong. They, you know, suggested I get a job and start to plan for my future, all of that, you know, because they wanted me to be okay on my own since they wouldn't be around for forever. You know, my dad was in his almost 50 when I was born. They knew they weren't going to be around, and that's the same thing for Bill and Dr. Bob. You know, they started the General Service Conference just to safeguard the fellowship when they were no longer able to care for us on such a personal level. The conference members were entrusted with those adult responsibilities, and the warranties guarantee that the conference itself conforms to the 12 traditions. They guide us to be cautious with our finances and to maintain a prudent reserve. Now, I don't know about you, but my idea of a prudent reserve used to be trying to make sure that my money lasted past Friday night at the bar, you know. But because I've been able to, you know, I had the honor of being a delegate, I've been able to see how important our finances are on a much larger level. You know, because it takes money to carry the message down the street and around the world. Our responsibility statement says that when anyone, anywhere, reaches out their hand for help, I want the hand of aid always to be there. But isn't it nice, wouldn't it be nice, if it's in a language they can understand? You know, and in that case, it takes so much money to translate, to print, to mail, all of that stuff. It just costs money. But past experience has shown that having too much money can often be more dangerous to our unity than not having enough. The first warranty cautions us against the conference becoming a seat of perilous wealth and power. I think we're okay there with the seventh tradition, you know? Seventh tradition, it's like, hey, you know, we don't accept outside contributions. We don't allow one person to give too much. And as long as we continue to provide the services that are necessary, I really think that we're safe. I don't think that that's going to happen, that we're going to have too much money. Now, our struggle will be simply to decide how to finance or how to spend that money well, which brings me to warranty four, the warranty that I think we do so well. That's the one where we talk about stuff until, you know, someone can't take it anymore and they jump up to call the question at the assembly. I that was one of the first things when I was in service, and it used to drive me absolutely crazy how much they would talk about, you know, those little tiny things, and I would just want to scream. But, you know, now I really appreciate and see the need to hear every voice. We don't have to agree, but when we don't listen, we've marginalized our brother or sister. You know, unity is encouraged by a show of respect, acknowledgement that our opinion has been heard. Anyone who has watched the vote completely shift after the minority has spoken can testify the importance of allowing a thorough discussion and gaining a majority, a substantial majority, whenever possible. In the world around us, one of the more disturbing things I see is when we have those people that wait around for someone to get hurt or something to fail so that they can say, see, I told you so, I was right, you know. And I see that so much on the political level. But that's not the way our society is going to grow. And it's definitely not the path of spirituality that's been laid out for us. You know, for us, it's not about who's right. It's about what's best for the fellowship. Perhaps the warranty that signifies maturity the most to me is warranty five, which is the one that warns against punishing individuals, that we will never be personally punitive. So what parent or guardian hasn't had to step back and allow the ones that they love to make their own mistakes, you know, to learn the necessary lessons? While the threat of consequences can deter many from foolish actions, we alcoholics, on the other hand, have a tendency to either not think things through or we rebel against punitive action, you know. But the benefit that we have is our disease. Our disease encourages the right action, and that foregoes the need for the AA police. The second part of the fifth warranty asks us to stay away from public controversy. It says, nothing could be more damaging to our unity and to the worldwide good which AA enjoys than public contention, no matter how promising the immediate dividends might appear. How many of you remember a couple of years ago when Charlie Sheen went on his rant about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? And the public kept waiting to hear a denial, a defense against his degradation of our way of life, of the program that had saved so many. But all there was silence, nothing but silence from the General Service Office. There's a confidence in that silence, a knowing that speaking up would only incite more rhetoric. The concept states, without anger or coercion, we would only need watch and to wait upon God's will. So we let the whirlwind blow itself out and concentrate on what we do best, carrying the message of recovery. And it's those kind of actions and inactions that make me a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Today I can recognize that when my sponsor questions me about what I'm doing, that she's concerned about my well-being and about my future. You know, I used to equate the word prudence with being a prude. It's not really not a very good association, and it's not valid. Now I understand when Bill W. wrote, "Prudence in practice creates a definite climate, the only climate in which harmony, effectiveness, and consistent spiritual progress can be achieved." As a society, and I hope as a human being, our goals will continue to be to create harmony, to provide an effective means of recovery, and to experience on a daily basis a consistent spiritual progress. This is the essence of maturity in our fellowship and is why I believe, why I pray that the doors will remain open to recovery and that everyone will have the same opportunity I have to live a sober life. So I thank you for letting me share, and Viva Canada.
As I was looking across the room, as Kathy was talking, I was thinking in my head, which is a bad thing for me. I was thinking, I was thinking, God, I wonder how many cowboys we have out there. Anybody ever want to be a cowboy? Oh, I did, but when we played cowboys and Indians, I always got chose the Indian. I don't know why. Our next speaker. She comes to us by the way of Rochester, New York. Melissa.
My name is Melissa. I'm an alcoholic. Let's see. My sobriety is February 21st, 2001. I have 14 years sober. My home group... My home group is the Love and Service Group in Rochester, New York. We meet on Saturday nights. We're an open meeting. We talk about the steps, traditions, and concepts and have a speaker meeting. And there's going to be a picture of our home group in the August grapevine where you can see the steps, traditions, and concepts banners hanging in the back of our room. Super exciting. I just got that email like a week ago, and it came in like perfectly with having this talk. So one of the first things that came for me to talk about today is to tell you that I'm not a past delegate, and I thought about my job, where we always have to spin things in a positive way, so I'm a future past delegate, because I know I am among many, but what I'm going to talk to you today is about my experience with the warranties and the concepts and how I use them in my personal life, how I use them at my home group, and how I use them at the inner group. I currently serve on the Board of Trustees at the Rochester, New York Inner Group. I love it, love it, love it. I have a home group with about 50 people, and about 35 of us are active every month, and I've served as the business chair at that meeting, and sometimes that is a more challenging job than serving at the inner group. And I'm going to talk about my experiences at the group and at the inner group. I've also been a GSR and a DCM, so I don't have conference experience to talk about, but I can use these warranties in other places, and that's what I'm going to tell you about today, is some of my experience with those things. I had to look for a new sponsor a couple of years ago, and I wanted a sponsor that loved Alcoholics Anonymous the way that I did and that also knew about the three legacies. I didn't want a sponsor that could talk about the steps, but I would have to tell her about what the concepts were and what I was doing in service. And so that's not easy to find. And I started looking like where I lived and the cities around me and like then the state and then like the like next state. And a friend of mine said, try listening to some women speakers on talks. And he would send me some links to women that were speaking on different things. And we kind of started with like steps 10 and 11. And he sent me a link to something where I heard a speaker on an Ask a Basket panel in Iceland get asked the question, my sponsees drink like at the four step or the amends. What can I do with them? And a woman answered it, and she said, well, I take my sponsees through the steps, the traditions, and the concepts in the service manual, and that's what we do, and they usually can stay sober while we do all of that. And I paused my phone listening to it and called my friend and said, I just found my next sponsor. And he said, great, who is she? And I said, I don't know. what I did know is that her name was Debbie, and she was in AA, and she was speaking on a panel of Ask It Baskets in Iceland and probably had already spoke for a while and had left out, like, you know, what my home group is, because she had spoken. But I found her. And so my picture of Debbie was, she was probably in the middle of the United States, like Oklahoma, I kind of thought. And I pictured a woman with like white, bluish hair and a perm. With a sweatshirt, like very, this is very vivid, a sweatshirt with a cat like ironed onto it. And I'm not done yet. And puff paint around the outside of it. And so I went looking for Debbie, and it can be hard to find someone in an anonymous fellowship, but I did find her. That's a whole other story in itself. And when I finally found Debbie, I realized I had met Debbie, and that when I met her, she impersonated Marilyn Monroe, and she's the most glamorous woman in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she lives by the three legacies. And so it was just kind of like every possible thing that you could look for, that I could look for, and it was just scripted all by God. I mean, it was just what it was supposed to be. And so hearing someone talk about the concepts and the service manual and like loving AA, still having a sponsor, like that's what I wanted, that's what I look for. That's what my sobriety is based in, that's what my home group is based in, and I love it, and it works in all areas of my life. Some of my friends are not allowed in. I don't think they were expecting a line for the warranties, and so they've been waving to me through that little tiny window over there, and I feel like I'm like in a fish tank or at the zoo or something. I sat down with a past delegate this past weekend that lives in my area, and I said, my topic is the warranties and maturity. What do you think about that? And he said to me, well, you know, the warranties separate the men from the boys. And he says it's really like the creme de la creme. And what I took from that is I had just been at a 12-step workshop the day before, and they talked about the sixth step, and the sixth step says we separate the men from the boys. And I had felt that way after doing my fifth step, and so I identified with that. And I kind of think, like, this is like a sixth step in a big way. Like, let's get rid of our character defects, and let God work through all of us. Like, God can be here. I take some women through the concepts at my home group, and they talk about, like, how do you get it? What are they really about? And it's just like, well, these are just about God and how to do service, and then apply a lot more God and more spiritual principles and God, and then you can get it. And sometimes it's very difficult to get, but I've really had the experience of working on the board of trustees in my intergroup to see these things be alive. When I first started on the board, the traditions would like fly around the room, and I'd have to like think and grab them and like pull them out of my mouth to say, we can't do that. This is the tradition. One of the first things that came up is that the space that we rent has a greenhouse attached to it. I don't really know why, but it does. And so someone said, let's rent it out and sell vegetables to local restaurants. And my mind was going, no, 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 no. And I had to think, like, what tradition applies here? And someone said, we couldn't sell it to a restaurant that sold alcohol because someone might get drunk. And I thought, no, that's not really the reason. And I, like, no, our primary purpose, we don't grow vegetables to sell. And so as I've stayed on the board and stayed sober, like, I can see those things. And then the concepts come. And I've been able to share, like, write a decision, you know, personally punitive, like, let's listen to our critics. And so we can take these things and use them. I'm going to kind of go through the warranties and kind of talk about my experience. Some of it I have just a little, and then some I have some really cool stuff. So the first warranty talks about how the conference never becomes the seat of perilous wealth or power. I'm an English teacher. I look things up. Perilous is dangerous or grave. We don't want to let the conference. And what I've kind of done is talked about like the group or the intergroup. We don't want to let my group, we don't want the intergroup become dangerous or powerful. Our intergroup body recently looked at our bylaws, and so the chair of our board said, hey, board members, take the bylaws home and read them over. See if you see anything that needs a change, simple little mistakes, or other changes. And I actually did that because I love AA and I want to do stuff like that. I got together with another board member. We had dinner and we read through all the bylaws and we talked about things. And we came back to the next board meeting and some people were like, you did what? And then, why not? That's what I'm here for. And one of the things that we talked about was that to be a trustee at the board, you can serve two times, and those are each two-year terms, so you can serve for 4 years, and you can kind of move throughout some of the board seats, and then you have to leave for 1 year, and then you can come back. And so what can happen, and maybe has happened, is you can be on the board for a couple of years, and then you can go and be the IR for your group, because nobody else wants to, the intergroup rep, and then you can come back to the board. And, like, you're keeping a lot of power there, you know, and we definitely have personalities on the board. I have a personality. I love it so much that I could foresee doing it for the rest of my life, and that would not be good for me, for you, for my ego. And so over dinner, my friend and I talked about, well, delegates can't be, like, delegate done, go back again. And we talked about that at the board meeting and said 5 years. And it went from 1 year to 5 years. And so that's not a lifetime like a delegate, but it is a little bit of time to move away from the board and not keep that power with you. The second warranty talks about sufficient operating funds plus an ample reserve, be its prudent financial principle. So enough operating funds plus enough in the bank, be a wise principle that we live by, a wise truth. And our budget at the Intergroup comes from a bunch of different things. And a couple years ago, the convention became a for-profit convention, and they give us a little bit of money, and it goes towards our budget. And if you can believe this, last year at the convention in Rochester, alcoholics drank $4,000 more coffee than was budgeted. And we had moved into a new hotel, and the hospitality rooms were open longer, and people just drank coffee. And they had to cut it off, and some people got mad about that. But there was $4,000 more, and it just wasn't expected. And now going forward, the convention committee knows that. But that $4,000 was expected to come to the intergroup budget. And it's one of the ways that we keep the intergroup operating. I was raised a long time ago that the intergroup is, like, out to get your money, and, like, they're not really for real. And, like, no, like, every single thing is on paper, and you can see it, and you can look at it, and it's very transparent. And so some people said, go to meetings and say, the intergroup is $4,000 under budget, give us some more money. And I thought, no, like, that's not what I want to do. You know, we want to talk about what the intergroup is doing and how your group can participate and how your group can be served and how we can serve your group and how you can serve. Yesterday morning, I had the amazing experience to go to a panel here where it was AA and the clergy. And it was how people who work in the clergy cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wish that you had all been there, because I can't put words on the power that I saw there. There was a man who was coming in from the Ukraine who was a minister and a monk, and his plane from the Ukraine was, like, canceled and delayed, and he was on the MARTA trying to get here. And he came in with about 15 minutes left, right out of a movie, a long flowing robe and a long gray beard and some jewelry. And he talked with a Ukrainian accent and, like, broken English. And he shared such a powerful story of AA in that country and how not everyone trusts people over there. And here's this thing, and they talk about God, and people are getting sober, and that people go and they do their confessions. And instead of Hail Marys now, they get sent to AA, and that people listen to that. And I thought, I want to give my paycheck to GSO to translate our book to send it to other countries. It was so real and alive, and it was life-saving. And my God, my sponsor always sends me an envelope to send on my anniversary. And I thought, like, I want to do that all the time. Like, look at that real life-saving solution that this friend of AA carried. So real. Like that's what makes me want to give my money. Not, we don't have enough money, give us some more money. I want to talk about this, how it affects me personally. When my husband and I first lived together and we got a bank account together and we talked about all of our money, my husband said, we're going to have two bank accounts, one where we pay the bills, one where we spend it on things, and we're going to get, like, a debit card and a checkbook, and I'm going to get the debit card and the checkbook, and you're going to get a checkbook. And I said, how am I going to pay for things? Like, how can I pay for gas or coffee or Seventh Tradition if I can't have, like, the money, only a check? And we had to talk about that, and that was, like, not the right way to handle our money, you know? And then over time, like, he totally heard that same day, he's not bad at all. And then we, over time, like, I have character defects where I want to buy every single thing that I possibly want. I love clothes and jewelry and shoes, and I have more than I need. And with my sponsor, I look at that in my sixth step, and we get to a point where my husband and I have a budget, and it's for real. You know, we have a sufficient amount of money to pay our bills. We have a sufficient amount of money to spend on things. It's wise. We do it with prayer. It's prudent. I love that word. I thought it meant prude too until I got into this. Like, the sixth step talks about it. Humility. You know, it's with God. And then I don't always do this the right way. I had a temper tantrum probably a few months ago in the parking lot of the grocery store that I want to buy what I want to buy when I want to buy it. And I yelled for a little while, and my husband was in a spiritually fit, sober mood that day. And he said, you're just having a temper tantrum. I'm like, you have to be an adult. You have to have some maturity, you know. And so this warranty I can apply to my own life as well to the group. The third warranty. I know I talk really fast, and I'm kind of nervous and excited. And And you can't think about anything else while I'm talking, I know. None of the conference members should be placed in a position of unqualified authority over any others. So I thought about this and thought about this and thought about this. What's been my experience with someone thinking that they're unqualified, lacking something else, or I lack it and they know more than me? And it came to me last Sunday, I'm a girl. I'm a female. And sometimes I serve with men who are significantly older than me that maybe they're nice in the mirror and say, you're real cute, you talk really fast, but I know more than you. You know, I don't know if anybody thought that looking at me up here on the panel, like, you're younger than everyone else. Like, what do you possibly have to think? And definitely people who are past delegates or past trustees or anything else like that, you are qualified. But what I experience sometimes is people who are unqualified to tell me that I'm a man, you're a girl, like, you don't need to say so much, like, I'm going to run this, you're going to, like, listen to me, you're going to take that out of the minutes, you're not going to do that. And that's unqualified. That's just absolutely unqualified. One of my best friends is a guy in AA, and we sometimes will say things at the business meeting, and I'll say, and they'll be like, Melissa, stop talking about the traditions. Like, be quiet. We don't want to hear you anymore. He'll say, and they'll be like, Jake, what a great idea. Wow. Like, where did you come up with that? You know, and I can joke about that, but there is some truth to that, that I definitely do experience that. Sometimes what I do is pull rank and say, how much time do you have sober? And sometimes I have more, and that works to kind of keep some of the older men who think they know more than me to be quiet. Warranty number 4 talks about all important decisions by reached by a discussion vote and whenever possible, substantial unanimity. I love substantial unanimity. I would tattoo it onto me if I did tattoos. I just think it's one of the most important things. We want to get to the point where we all agree. We don't want to be split in AA. And my home group used to give most of our money to the church. We were set up with a way that we always gave 2/3 of our seventh tradition to the church, the rest to the service entities, and the service entities would end up with about like $10 from us each month, $14. And we're really into service, and that's not a lot of money to give to the service entities. And when I was serving as treasurer, I said, I think we need to change the way we give our money to the church. And our group had a lot of arguments about that. And I can specifically remember someone yelling at me, you're stealing from the church if you don't give them that money. And we had a vote, and it passed like 26 to 24. And as treasurer, it had passed. We were going to change it, and I left, and I felt so unright. It was angry. It was hostile. Like, we had ended at a certain point because it was time and the vote, and it's not substantial unanimity. And so I brought it back the next month, and I said, I didn't change it. I think we need to spend more time on it. There's that great part in the group pamphlet where it talks about how to reach a decision. And we spent probably like 6-9 months a year talking about it, and we got to the point where we all agreed. And we changed the way we give our money and how we contribute, and we give more. And over time, we've changed how do we contribute to the service entities that we support that are in our Rochester area. We had a name change in our group. Our name used to possibly imply affiliation with other groups and cities, and we said substantial unanimity, it's going to be how we get to this name. And really, we voted our name like third legacy procedure. These names had to have 2/3 to move forward, and then these went forward, and these went forward, and we came up with a new name, and it caused some people to quit the group, but it was as well as it could be, and there was never a problem with the name change after that. Another thing that our group recently did was give out coins for anniversaries. And some of us were kind of raising this idea that coins are like making money off alcoholism. Don't use them. But our group, like, used them anyways, kind of like on the sly and like secretly. Sponsors would pass them out and you would go to another meeting to get them. And we started to celebrate anniversaries, and I served in a position as membership chair. And what I would do is like let other group members know, hey, today's this person's anniversary. And people would text them or call them or say things. And nobody ever complained about having their anniversary acknowledged. And we started to talk about, let's use coins at our group. And that was a really, really, really big thing for us. Our group has like a group conscience that any change to format requires substantial unanimity. And those are things like the name change or like we're going to move. And so we're talking about this, and some people are really against it and said substantial unanimity is what we have to do here. And then someone said, okay, let's take a vote on it. You know, majority, do we want to do it? And they said, we don't have to vote on that because that's a format change. And I'm thinking in my head, I don't know if passing out coins is a format change. Like, we've changed like announcements, types of meetings, the speakers. Those haven't been format changes. And so someone kind of used that as a weapon automatically, substantial unanimity. Even though our group wanted that, it was used at the wrong time. We were able to come back, more discussion, and eventually, I think everyone passed it. I think everyone voted yes for it. And if you look in the grapevine in August, you will see that, you might not see it, but it's there. There is a plastic container on the secretary's table that has the coins. You know, I love that that picture is in there and it's shown that. The conference will never be personally punitive or an incitement to public controversy is Warranty 5, and Warranty 6 talks about not performing acts of government and remaining democratic in thoughts and action. I'm going to talk about a group in Rochester that my husband went to one night. He's sober in AA, too. We went there with a guy and came home, and he said, it's not an AA meeting anymore. They played videos about the Bible and Jesus, and they played Christian soft rock before the music, the meeting started. And my husband is Jewish, and he raised his hand kind of towards the end and said, what if you're not Christian? Can you be an AA? And they said, the meeting's over with. And so he came home, and I said, you're making that up. Like, you're lying. And it was like, and I went there, and it was kind of like last night, you know how the speakers are on the big projectors so we can all see them? Like, one of those projectors, like, was brought in with, like, you know, computer and, like, the projector and the screens. And, yes, they would play videos about this religion and talk about it and talk about the Bible. And kind of to make matters worse, it was held at a treatment center. And so the patients of the treatment center who were in detox or rehab didn't go to it, but there was a huge outpatient there, and outpatient members were there all the time. It was constantly someone's first meeting in AA, and it was also constantly where professionals went. There's a hospital connected to it, so you would see nursing students and doctor students. And I hear all the noise you're making, so you agree with me that this is no longer an AA meeting. But the board at the Rochester Intergroup, when it was brought to them, like really struggled to see things the way that I saw things with this and said, I don't even want to repeat this stuff. Like, AA got started that way, so it's okay, some other kind of things. And then someone at the board said, or even the Intergroup said, well, we can never be personally punitive. And another board member, who was out there waving at me at the window because he couldn't get in, said, this is not personally punitive. I'm not talking about a person. We're talking about a group. You know, and so the sixth warranty talks about how groups be AA. We stay AA, provided a group is doing AA purpose. And this group had veered from that. It had two purposes. The board of our trust intergroups, the chair of our board had said, I contacted GSO, and like a couple months went by and hadn't heard from them. I said, I'm going to contact them. And like I got back to me in like 2 or 3 days, and they said, invite the group to your intergroup body and talk about it. Someone had brought it up there too. And let them be a part of all of it. Don't hide things, because sometimes our board wants to like kind of, don't put that in the minutes. Hide that. We're much more bigger than what we are here, and you can't know. And no. And so we let them be a part of it and let them talk about it. Let them share their minority opinion. And we did that eventually, and like I told everyone at the intergroup what GSO had said about this, and we wanted to move forward. And someone went to the group to see, do you want to come and talk about this with us? And nobody came. And like, we didn't know what to do. We didn't know what to do. Do we tell this treatment center what they're doing? Do we do this? Do we do that? Do we do this? The board was kind of split on it, and we couldn't reach. And then, I mean, God just worked, because all of a sudden we got a phone call from someone who worked there and said that we're no longer going to have 12-step meetings here at the facility that's open to the public. It has nothing to do with what happened there, but we've had some problems with past patients coming in and bringing things and doing things in the bathroom with other things. And so, you know, we didn't have to make those like tough, really tough decisions. What do we do? How does it happen? But, you know, that meeting no longer is open. And it's absolutely not because of that, but it was because of drugs and sex that those things were stopped. And there's other 12-step groups that were going in there, and they said that's kind of more the problem, and it's some of the patients, and it's the halfway house. But they said, but what you could do is give us some more treatment meetings, institution meetings that are brought in by the committee. So there's more of those there, and that one meeting is not there. So that's kind of my experience with this. I think if we follow these principles, God will run the show, you know. And that's all. Thank you.
She does talk fast, don't she? I'm just now catching up to second paragraph. Our next speaker comes to us by way of Ohio. He's a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous, Mark.
Holy cow. Before I get too far, would one of you gentlemen in the back bring me up a cup of water, please? And I got to tell you, and this is not in my script, but I was... Oh, thanks. I was born in Rochester, New York. But we moved out. We moved out at age... when I was like 2 years old, so that's why I'm... You know, some people that know me as a bit of an energizer, but nothing like that, Bunny. Thank you so much. Anyway, good afternoon. I want to thank my Area 56 delegate, Garwood F., for suggesting my participation in this international convention, and Eva S., on behalf of our General Service Board, for the loving invitation to participate in this particular program. And I'm reading this thing because if I just went off the cuff, God knows where we'd end up. So I'm just trying to stay where I should be. I'm an alcoholic named Mark E., sober since October 18th, 1980, past delegate for Area 56, Panel 62, currently serving as the Ohio State Archivist, currently serving as the East Central Regional Historian, and most importantly, a member of the Mason Monday Night Step Study Group in Mason, Ohio. Come see us if you get a chance. Anyway, if you've never seen the warranties, it's probably true then that you have missed either Chapter 7 of the AA Service Manual or the conference charter, or the bylaws of the General Service Board, or the 12 Concepts of World Service. The warranties are published in all those four places and are even included in Appendix 6 of the fourth edition of our big book. They are important. I do enjoy the title of this session, The Warranties, quote, The Warranties, Maturity in the Fellowship, and I think a more appropriate title might have been something like The Warranties, Keeping Us Children from Corrupting the Program. I look at the warranties as something like our AA Bill of Rights. To me, they're that important. They're sometimes also known as Concept 12, since Concept 12 of the 12 concepts is where the warranties appear, and that is all that's in Concept 12. And I already lost my place. Anyway, more than that, while most of the conference charter, the bylaws of the General Service Board, and the other 11 concepts may be changed, if necessary, by the General Service Conference, the warranties are protected in much the same way as our steps and traditions. So you understand, if we want to change these warranties, it's just like changing Tradition 11. We got to get 3/4 of all the groups in all the known groups in the world to come to substantial unanimity on such a change. So we're probably with these warranties and our steps and our traditions as they are for a long time. Now, the 12 concepts deal with, in general, how we run the business of Alcoholics Anonymous, and since the rest of the concepts address how we take care of those business activities, and since Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual fellowship, not a traditional business, the 12th concept is here to help us understand that we have very specific limits on the conference and our board of trustees. Bill wrote that the trustees are primarily to assure that the conference complies with the spirit of the 12 traditions. And beyond that, I see at least some of these concepts active in all levels of AA service. And you've already heard some of it, and I've experienced it also, and I think to some degree we all have. And I think as I go through the rest of my stuff, if you haven't already said, hey, we do that in my group, you'll get even more. Warranty 1 tells us that, quote, the conference shall never become the seat of perilous wealth and power. Now, I'm not sure why Bill made this first pledge, but I suspect that simply observing how most of the world operates, we are to avoid career or perpetual leaders, as well as avoiding such special interests funding our services. If you're thinking this is covered in the traditions, well, yeah, it is, and to some degree, but just to be sure, Bill loved to close potential loopholes for alcoholics such as myself, who like to, find any way to sneak around these corners. And traditions 2, 6, 7, and 12 contribute to protecting the same ideal, and we do have even more to assure this warranty. The conference is limited the amount of money any single individual may contribute to the operation of the General Service Board to a relatively minimal amount in relation to the annual budget. Now, some people will say $3,000, that ain't minimal. But against, you know, millions of dollars worth of budget, it is relatively minimal. So none of us could pay the piper's tune, if you will. Further, we do not accept outside contributions. Area delegates are absolutely positively limited to a single two-year term of service. That's it. The area delegates make up more than two-thirds of the voting member of the General Service Conference. So, you know, again, you know, a lot of control in people who ain't going to be here long. Our 14 Class B who are alcoholic trustees are absolutely limited to four successive one-year terms. So they're re-upped for 4 years, and when their 4 years are done, that's it. And they make up two-thirds of the voting members of our General Service Board. Again, it's a nice little assurance that, you know, nobody's going to be in power too terribly long. At least that's the theory. And yes, our Class A trustees, non-alcoholic Class A trustees, may serve two consecutive three-year terms, and some may even be asked to serve a third three-year term. Doesn't happen often, but it can. But nevertheless, it's still a limitation. And these guys are, I mean, these Class A trustees, you see them around here, love the daylights out of them because they're here for no other reason than they love alcoholics. And they're special folks in my book. They really are. Our chairman, the chairman of the board, is limited to no more than four successive one-year terms. And when, you know, when you see that, well, each year the board literally re-votes their membership. And so the chairman is re-upped for 4 years, but no more. All these protections assure that no one individual will become a professional leader. And in my experience as a delegate from Area 56, a single two-year term gave me just enough time to become totally comfortable with how the conference works at about the same time my second year of service ended. And that's true with many of our service positions. Once you really know what the heck you're doing, it's time to let somebody else do it. And again, that keeps, you know, all this power. I mean, it keeps any of us from being all that powerful. And it's just, it's to me, it's a blessing. It's a miracle the way this works. Okay. Another way to look at this is an incident from a couple years ago. In Ohio, we were discussing the possible need to change the short version of Tradition 11. Remember, we were talking about adding the Internet or something like that. Anyway, so we did a bunch of meetings around the area, and at the end of one meeting, one of the members suggested that after we had discussed the issue, they would change it. And I looked at him and says, you know, hey, who in the world are they? Had to make it clear that we are the ones that are going to make any changes in these things, not they. And that's, to me, an important part of how this whole thing works. That we have that power, not they, is another thing, that the protection that's given us in the 12th concept. The conference is not a seat of wealth and power. The wealth and power of AA belongs to the groups. And the conference is just there to serve the groups. And don't you ever forget that. The conference ain't telling you what to do. You're telling the conference what to do. Warranty 2 tells us that, quote, sufficient operating funds plus an ample reserve should be its prudent financial principle. Fortunately, our relative stinginess and our refusal to accept large sums of money from our more generous members, combined with the insistence that only AA members may provide our financial support, we have been and continue to be close to financial insolvency. And that's just the way it is. And yes, we have sufficient operating funds, and yes, we have a prudent reserve, but we don't have, nor can we afford, opulent offices, company cars, corporate jets, or even the latest techno gadgets. I mean, we really are close to a shoestring operation. And that's, for me, the way it works. I think that the general frugal nature of our fellowship membership makes this warranty work. Oh, and this is where we get our prudent reserve that, you know, that my group and your group uses. And, you know, warranties do filter on down to us. And it's important to understand that for our General Service Board anyway, the target amount for our prudent reserve is equal to somewhere between 9 and 12 months of operating expenses, not years and years and not a couple weeks. And so whenever you're discussing the prudent reserve for your group. Again, it's like, you know, some reasonable period of time. And it's just an opportunity to cover you when things just don't seem to go right for a little while. And this is not to say that we don't pay or will not pay our necessary employees a reasonable salary, but we are not extravagant. Since aid depends on contributions from members and groups, putting aside a reasonable amount of savings to keep our services going is, if contributions drop off for a short while, is a good idea. We can't and won't ask the government to bail us out if times get tight. That makes us unique again, you know? It's like, actually, we often do hear that when a group or an intergroup or area or district or even GSO needs money, somehow or another, we always manage to dig into our pockets and remedy the problem. It just seems to work. I've been, you know, in the time I've been around, any number of times I've heard of problems, you know, anywhere, and we just seem to make it, you know, we solve it. If the call goes out, we stand up. Warranty 3 tells us that none of the conference members shall ever be placed in a position of unqualified authority over the others, over any of the others. This warranty deals directly with the conference, but it follows a promise of tradition, too, where we are reminded that our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Talk about unqualified. I'm reminded, one item that I shared in my second conference, and we have a delegate meeting early on in each of the conferences. And so it was at this first delegate meeting of my second conference, and all of us delegates are there just sharing our how to succeed in the conference kind of thoughts. And we were sharing suggestions for success at the conference with the first-year delegates, and I offered a comforting statement that all of us second-year delegates had all of, ready for this, 6 days more conference experience than they had. Hardly make me qualified for darn near anything, right? I mean, 6 days, goodness sakes, can barely learn to do anything in 6 days. So, it's, you know, clearly we were not qualified to have any authority over anyone, and more than that, this helps us understand that even the chairman of the board or any trustee or even staff members who also serve at the conference are simply equal members. I served as chairman of the Report and Charter Committee in my second year. My vote counted no more than any other member of the committee. I couldn't make them do a darn thing. My great wisdom, my vast experience carried no more weight than any of the other members of the conference, and I had no control over how the members of my committee or my region voted on any issue, including that stuff that I really knew about, you know? Oh, well. Anyway, the same is true for all the other members of the conference. One person who regularly attends my home group, and there's a couple folks here that attend my home group will probably recognize this, fond of saying, there are no bosses in AA, and if there were bosses, he would not be here. And that's again, how, you know, these concepts really filter down to some of the basics of how it goes. There's no place in this guy's experience where he's actually seen anything like that, but he just, you know, intuitively knew that. Warranty 4 tells us that all important decisions be reached by discussion, vote, and whenever possible, by substantial unanimity. So did you ever wonder where substantial unanimity came from? This is it. Warranty 4 is the answer. And here again, some roots in tradition, too, where we attempt to reach a decision with the direction of our higher power. Unanimity is a wonderful concept in AA and is much more than majority rule. The idea is to get as close as possible to everyone agreeing on an action. We use tools such as asking for and listening to minority opinion on votes. And if we can't get two-thirds agreement on an issue, we just don't move on. We typically define substantial unanimity as at least two-thirds majority, and even on some occasions where at least three-quarters majority is desired. Sure, there are some items that get unanimous approval, but more often than not, there is some dissension. This dissension leads us to listen to the minority, so we do ask for a minority opinion on all votes, followed by a possibility of a revote. And just as an aside, and I'm really going to go off script here, a friend of mine talks about abstentions. And for the longest time, I've always treated abstentions as like you went to the bathroom, you just weren't here for the vote, too bad. However, there were some occasions on some votes at the conference where I could not vote either for or against an issue because there was still more information that had to be out there. Now, Meek Mark, because he didn't vote on the losing side, couldn't get up to the microphone and state why he didn't vote. And maybe, just maybe, we want to consider at some point in the future also asking for abstentions and why in the world you abstain. You know, and don't want to vote is okay, but not enough information. Maybe we have to do something about that too. And, you know, it's AA, we can change darn near anything, except for the warranties and the steps and the traditions. Anyway, Bill wrote that our desire for substantial unanimity is a, quote, safeguard against any hasty or overbearing authority by a simple majority. I was recently dismayed when I read that our General Service Board changed the procedure for selecting the general manager of our General Service Office. When they wrote in procedure number 9 that, quote, if substantial unanimity cannot be achieved after substantial discussion and reflection, the chair of the General Service Board may call for a vote by simple majority. Ooh. And at the same time that our board approved that procedure for selecting the general manager, they reaffirmed the procedure to elect the next chairman of the board. And at that point, they clearly said that they're going to use the third legacy procedure, because we have a third legacy procedure where we go to the hat to make the selection if substantial unanimity cannot be achieved. And we do this. I mean, we do this in local elections. We do this in area elections. We do it at the General Service Conference when we're electing our regional trustees and trustees at large. And it's a procedure that seems to work quite well. And what was pointed out to me, if you're not entirely familiar with the third legacy procedure, is we can go up to 5 levels of votes. But in between each of those votes, we are removing those who don't get, you know, like under 20%, under 30% of votes or whatever the heck, and we're down to like 2 people. But we give enough time in between those votes for every individual who's voting to reflect on what in the world's going on and for whom they want to vote. And so it's an opportunity to reconsider, you know, your position on stuff. And if we still can't come to substantial unanimity on down to 2 candidates, then we put their names in a hat and we let that procedure select it. And my observation of those opportunities leads us to somebody winning who actually then has the support of darn near everybody in the room. Now, certainly not everybody's happy, but a lot more than 50% are happy. And it just seems to work. Boy, did I go off script. Okay. Okay, so I still wonder why our board made the decision for the general manager selection, and I have written and voiced my objection, and you can too, if it bothers you. So anyway, I'll move on. Warranty 5 tells us that, quote, no conference action shall ever be personally punitive or an incitement to public controversy. And again, I think of Ken. That's the guy in my home group that comes by and visits every now and again, I mentioned earlier, who's glad there aren't any bosses in AA. His constant reminder is that I can't tell him to do anything, and more important than that, I can't keep him out. And he's right. Now, maybe some corollary similar to this may be found in the long form of Tradition 3, but I can assure you that Ken does not know much of anything about the warranties, and there's people in this room who will testify to that. And yet he knows, and probably intuitively, that we can do nothing that might be personally punitive, like throwing him out of AA. No fines, no restraints, no punishments. We cannot single out a single member because of his beliefs or lack of beliefs. Just as important, we follow the suggestions of Traditions 11 and 12, where we refrain from any public controversy. Our General Service Office and many intergroup offices receive phone calls, letters, and emails almost every day for the AA position on a variety of public issues. Public anonymity breaks by some celebrity, and that's been mentioned, followed by some behavior attracting attention gets no comment from AA. A state deciding to legalize an intoxicant will get no comment from AA. A successful athlete giving public credit to AA and his sponsor gets no comment from AA. We simply avoid public or private involvement in outside issues. And further, the conference has to be quite careful in the wording of our various pamphlets and books to assure that no controversy is stirred up by our written materials or actions. Go off script again. There's some books that, even I use some non-conference approved daily readings. All I can do is I can reflect back to very early, and I met this one priest who also refused to use that book because a lot of the meditation quotes in there were from the book of John, and he couldn't stand John. You know? And that's his business. But the point is, what the conference tries to do is literally parse, go through every word and everything that we have, so we're not going to do something like put him off, you know? And so that particular book never got conference approval because it would just take too much rewriting to get it into something that is not offensive enough for all of us. And that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's fine. That's fine. And I'm happy using that. And every now and again, I'll read one of these quotes that I know really would irritate the daylights out of that poor priest. And I smile and think about him and, you know, thank him for his service and whatever. Okay, so and we have God as you understand him, and we just don't join into any further definition. And I love that about AA, too. I mean, you know, it's just a friend will say, hey, Mark, you got, you know, got a God that works for you? And, yep, and that's the end of the discussion. No definitions, no do you go to church about him, no nothing else. You know, and that's all you guys want to know is, you got, do I have a God that I understand that works for me? We're done, and that's cool. We let the reader and the member decide on their own, and we avoid directing them in any direction. Warranty 5 even reaffirms that we treat those who try AA and go out for other solutions and come back and try again. We continue to welcome back. And the last thing we want to do is treat them as some sort of second-class member. We just don't do that. AA just doesn't sue individuals or businesses. When I started my journey in AA, the sobriety tokens looked pretty much as they do today, except on the rear, in the rear center, there was an AA embossed in the center of the token on the backside. So here we go again. And currently now, if you pull out one of those tokens, the center rear is blank, at least if they're currently manufactured. Why? Well, we had a registered trademark of the circle and triangle. You might have heard about that. And we have another registered trademark for AA. The various companies, and they're not AA, that produce these sobriety tokens, they're private businesses, were violating our trademarks. So we could sue them. We could take them to court. But we decided to drop the circle and triangle trademark, but still keep the AA trademark with the understanding that they'd stop using the AA marking on the back rear of the coins and leave the circle and triangle, and so everybody ended up happy, and we avoided a public controversy. Now, there are situations that maybe aren't as smooth as that, but I just want to give that example. Warranty 6 is the last warranty that tells us that, quote, though the conference may act for the service of general service of Alcoholics Anonymous, shall never perform acts of government, and like the Society of Alcoholics Anonymous, which it serves, the conference itself will always remain democratic in action and spirit. And I wrote in normal format, Bill W. tends to use the last warranty in a similar tone as we see in the 12th step and the 12th tradition. Yes, the conference makes decisions for the fellowship, and yes, some decisions may not always be accepted by every member, but the action is still not that of a government. My home group reads 12 and 12. My copy's from 1980, and it does not have the introduction, which was added in 2003. That's okay. It's just fun when we read that part of the book to just sit there and listen, which is what I did a lot in early recovery, and just sit and listen, that is. If we were a government, we could state that everyone must use the current version of every publication to avoid any confusion. And so, you know, my sponsor still shows up at big book meetings with his second edition wondering, what page are they on? His choice. We do not have dues or fees, and there's no way that the conference can invoke such a requirement. There are no AA police, although there are times when it might be a good idea. as a delegate, I was asked to make this group stop this or tell that group or individual how to do AA right. I was even sent notes from the General Service Office to visit a member in my area who was producing websites and videos which were close to violating our copyrights and trademarks, let alone breaking his anonymity at a public level. I served as a delegate and a trusted servant, not a cop. All I could do was to remind all of those folks of our steps, traditions, and concepts, share a few pamphlets and other appropriate service materials, and then turn the results over to God as I understand Him. Mutual respect and love is the hope and goal of how we operate. One last story might help you understand how different we are in the way we behave. It was late in the week, the 63rd conference, and we were debating a pretty heated subject. Any member wishing to address the issue goes to the microphone, has 2 minutes to share their thoughts. The debate had come quite heated, and unpleasant words and personal denunciations were flying all over the room. My fellow delegate from Ohio, back here, was at the microphone, introduced himself, and then asked the remainder of his 2 minutes be used by all of us to silently reflect on why we were there and what we were there to do for the fellowship. I looked at the timer, who's not a member of our fellowship, is just a GSO employee, and she didn't know what to do, and she looked at the chair, and the chair said, "Start the timer." So she starts the timer. Room goes silent. 2 minutes later, she rings the bell, and we became civil. And they just don't do that anywhere else. We just don't. We were again acting for the service of Alcoholics Anonymous, not as a government. The conference is a spiritual entity, and we mortals were gladly returning to serving you and those to come. I want to thank you for your presence and attention, and I hope that I said something which will help you to become a better citizen in our life-saving fellowship. Thanks.